Hello and welcome to Talk Spooky to Me, the Ghost Story Guys mail show. I'm Brennan Storr.
I'm Paul Bestor.
And this is our opportunity to hear from you, our listeners. Paul, my friend, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Very well. It's been a busy week, but you know me. I like to keep myself entertained.
Yes, sir. You and I have the same approach that way. Downtime is the devil.
I did take one evening off to do stuff, but yes, it's a busy week, but these things need to be done.
Oh, that's it. I did the same thing myself, actually. I used to have this really bad habit of chewing my fingers, you know, not just like nails, but like actually the skin around my fingers.
Yes.
And I stopped for about 3 years. And then I just noticed in the last month or so, I'd started doing it again. And it's I don't like it because your hands look like shit afterwards. They hurt, you know, because you're chewing through the skin. So you put your fingers in it, like hot water or anything lemony or spicy. And it's just a bastard. So I thought I want to figure out why I'm doing this again. So I looked it up, and apparently it's sort of a kind of like a sub disorder of OCD. If you're under a lot of stress or if your nervous system's overexcited, this can happen. And I thought, okay, so how do I fix this? How do I relax myself? And the solution that I've come up with is carpet bombing my nervous system with cannabis. And it's worked. I usually buy like CBD edibles because obviously, you know, it's legal here in Canada. And so I've just been power eating these things throughout the course of my day. And it has really just really brought me right back down. So I'm just my usual level of insane and not the hair trigger insanity that I've been for about the last 2.5 weeks. Well, we have a very special episode of Talk Spooky for you folks. We have not only a handful of email, we've got a very limited selection of email this time, but that's because we have a really fabulous interview with an artist who I have been looking forward to meeting properly for a very long time now. That artist is Brett Manning. So again, we're going to do some email. And then after the break, we are going to be sitting down with the wonderfully talented artist from Indiana, Brett Manning. Again, someone we've been following on social media for a very long time now, and who Paul has had on Mysteries and Monsters, and what is a really great episode.
And a wonderful, as I said to her when she would join me, created one of the most beautiful books I own.
Yes, One Foot in the Green. Also one of the most beautiful books I own. Absolutely.
Fabulous.
But before we get there, we're going to check the mail.
Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you.
First up is from Shelley. And Shelley says, I gotta say that I've never done this. I love the show. I'm a quiet Midwest, middle-aged, Gen X, very introverted woman. Likely not the normal demographic. I've been obsessed with everything paranormal since I was a kid. I love the banter and never felt so much in great company as I did today when I listened to the Great British Haunt Off. I feel like I could have some great conversations with both of you, and in today's crazy world, I feel that that's a rare thing. Thank you for the laughs, and knowing there are similarly minded people in this world.
Well, thank you, Shelley. Thank you very much. That's very kind. I actually think that might be our normal demographic.
Well, we've got some strange niche fan bases, I think.
This is true, yes.
But we are a broad church and we welcome all.
That's it. Yep. Everyone is welcome here. We love you all. I was joking to Paul off air that I had a message from someone on the Instagram account recently who said that he thought we were a right wing show and accountant. I don't know where the fuck they got that, but no, absolutely not. We do not discriminate against anyone on the basis of anything other than if you're an asshole. If you're an asshole, we don't really want you around. You can reform and not be an asshole, then you are welcome. But other than that, everyone here is welcome and loved.
Cowboys fans.
Except for them. But you can reform.
Come join the Commanders. We need all the help we can get. It's all about the coaching, mate.
It's all about the coaching, as long as they can stay healthy.
It's all that matters in the long run.
All right, next one is from Tessa Marie on YouTube. She says, Paul, do you get chills/goosebumps whenever you see something paranormal that's real? Because I can tell if something is real or fake. If I get goosebumps, then I lean into it being real. It rarely happens, but when it does, it's like a wave of fear and panic sets in for just a second. Then the goosebumps wash over me. Does this happen or something similar happen to you too? Great show like always, fellas. Thank you.
Yes. Yes, it does. I've had it a few times when I've seen ghost footage or EVPs, recordings of Bigfoot howls, There are some times when you hear people when they talk and their experience can send a chill up your spine. I remember when I spoke with Calvin Parker.
Oh, yeah.
That made me feel uncomfortable, but not in the reasons I thought it would.
Interesting. Can you expand on that?
Well, yeah, because, I'll be brutally honest. I was deeply skeptical about the abduction phenomena. It was one of the key reasons I'd gone away from the UFO field. I'd completely lost interest in it for the best part of 20 years. And since doing the show, it's kind of brought me back, and listening to researchers like Ryan Sprague and getting to know people like Philip Mantel and Malcolm Robinson and speaking to people like Calvin made me realise that I'd been too harsh. I'm still deeply critical. There's a lot of nonsense.
Yes.
As we mentioned during our conversation with Brett, one particular character is a prime example of that. And I do get the opposite effect of goosebumps. Is I'd like to think, in the vast majority of occasions, I can smell a rat. There's been a couple of people I've interviewed on my show, one where halfway through I just didn't believe a word that they were saying.
Oh, boy.
And one on looking back, I realised that they probably were making it all up. As compelling as their experience and their tale was, I think it sadly was probably something of a delusion. But in the vast majority of cases, I've spoken to people that have had encounters with yowies and ghosts, seen strange things. I've seen a strange thing. So I think it's a good thing. I think if you get a feeling in your gut, in general, in life, you have a reaction for some kind of reason, be that good or bad.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that has been my experience. You know, obviously, I'm very skeptical of most footage. But the odd times when I see something that I think has more credibility, it produces a similar effect to what Tessa's describing. That sense of, if not quite fear and panic, but a sense of something's wrong. Like I'm looking at something and something's wrong. And then, yeah, the goosebumps. Funny enough, I was thinking about this earlier today because, you know, obviously I've been doing this for 7 years as of January 17th. And, you know, I haven't had a major paranormal experience in probably a couple of years now. No, actually, that's not true. I guess I had the one last year with the shadow figure in Montreal. But other than that, I haven't had a ton of paranormal experiences in the last little while. So you kind of drift. I drift from it sometimes, you know, when I forget the immediacy of that feeling. And then I kind of have to remind myself, no, you've seen this stuff, you know, and there's so much fakery out there too, right? So I get a little bit jaded, but then I remind myself, no, you've seen these things, and remind myself of what that felt like, you know, the first time. It's a visceral thing, but interesting that it, for me, sometimes it's also easy to forget. I think it's maybe because it's not like a congruent experience with most of your daily life.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer in gut feelings.
So thank you very much, Tessa.
Laurie writes next, "Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for introducing me to Ruth Roper Wilde and her books. I will be adding them to my Audible queue very soon. As they say, opinions are like assholes, and we all have one." Well, joke's on you. I have two. Opinions, not assholes. But now I have your attention, don't I? Paul, I remember the wall texture you talked about. We had it in the US in the 80s too. I always referred to it as a cheese grater texture. I'm legally blind and I lost bits of skin off my knuckles many times by brushing too close to a booby-trapped wall. That stuff was shit to live with, shit to clean and shit to get rid of. Dumbest wall treatment ever. My second opinion is why spirits like stairs. We witches would consider places like stairs, hallways, attics, and times like dawn and dusk as being liminal, a place of transition, or one that touches or bridges boundaries. These liminal places are believed to be thin, or places where spirits, energy, or whatever you want to call it, can more easily move through or manifest. I love you guys. You are awesome.
Well, thank you very much, Laurie. That's very kind. Funny enough, we've had a few people reach out to say this, that here in Canada, it's called popcorn.
See, it's everywhere.
I did not realize that's what it, because I think every apartment I've ever lived in has had a popcorn ceiling. And yeah, it's hideous. It's the worst thing. I mean, it doesn't quite sound like the brutal death machine that you've described, you know, the nightmare wound waiting to happen, but it looks terrible.
Yes, it's like something Takamita would have invented. Self-flagellation for the 80s.
Now in the comfort of your own home. Get it soon before it goes back in the Disney vault.
Yeah, if you're an angry teenager and you're really annoyed that your heart's been broken, you can just lean on your Artex and feel the pain of your heart.
It's like the people who do the suspension thing, you know, or the beds and nails.
Yeah. Well, beds and nails, it's all about physics, isn't it? It's not as difficult as it may first seem.
I keep hearing that, but I'm just not going to try. Next up is from Lee, coming from YouTube. Lee says, "This has become my favorite podcast over the last year. These two guys just perfectly hit it off and are also funny. Thank you, fellas." No, Lee, thank you.
Warms my heart.
It really does. We're very lucky to do what we do.
Finally, Kelly on Instagram writes, "Hi, Brennan and Paul. I'm not really sure if you pick up messages on Instagram. I really do listen. I am just usually multitasking. First, Emma reading cryptic erotica is the best thing. It's cringe, and she reads them so well. Secondly, following on from the dreams about places that you feel that you've been, I had this when I was younger. I was adamant that I had been to this place that I used to dream about. It seemed so real, as did the memories, but I never worked out what was happening. Was it real? Was it just a vivid dream? It even brought back feelings. Also, my brother and I used to talk about this tire rope swing we had been to. I think we were about 10 or 8 years old, but had talked about it for a few years. We remembered so much about it, but my parents, even to this day, remain positive that this place never existed. I can't explain it at all. Anyway, absolutely love the podcast. One of my favorites."
Well, thank you very much. I'm always fascinated by that, by these memories, by again, this notion of places that we think we've been to, but they don't ever exist.
I know Jim Harold recently had an episode about time slips.
Okay.
Which I think kind of falls into this category in some instances, because some of them were people that were adamant that they'd seen or been somewhere where they lived, and then when they come back, it wasn't there. And I think sometimes, as we were saying about people always mentioning doppelgangers when they're really on about voyagers, I think it's one of those things that it's always a time slip now. Whereas I think lots of people have these memories of places that people tell them, well, that never happened, or we didn't go there. That didn't happen. And yet when you look at some of these other stories, I mean, there was one that a lady rang in about, and she was on about this house her and her friends found in the woods, and they ended up seeing something or someone who looked just as shocked at seeing them as they were of seeing him.
Oh, okay.
And it was all a bit surreal, the way he acted and what happened, and the fact that then his mum came out, she could see him and she looked shocked. And then they went back to try and find the house and it wasn't there anymore. And where it was, the trees had grown through it and everything.
Well, I mean, you and I, during the conversation that we recorded with Brett, that our listeners will be hearing shortly, you know, we talk a little bit about Twin Peaks season 3. And this idea that David Lynch puts across using this visual metaphor of two things being in the same place. And I do wonder about that. You know, this, again, these places that they look one way to one person, but if you have the eyes to see, or if you're there at the right time when they are accessible, it's something else entirely.
Mm, yes, definitely.
No, I find that fascinating. Again, I always think about that missing 411 story. About the which is not just a 411 story, it's also a news story about that guy missing in, I want to say, Colorado on a nature trail. And the reporter heard him calling for help. But the park ranger told the reporter, "Yeah, we know. We don't know where he is. We hear it too." And that has always haunted me.
I think the one that always strikes me about all of those ones, the case that's always given me the creeps in the 411, and it's probably not one of the main ones, but it was one that was in the Missing film.
Okay, yeah.
There was that family, and they were all hunting, and they were all 200 yards apart, and the old guy just vanished. He just completely vanished. There was like 6 or 7 of them.
Right.
And they were all set out in formation, as they always did, and he disappeared. They couldn't find him anywhere. Nothing. Not a trace. It's literally like he'd just gone up into the sky.
Yeah.
Or maybe he did.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, there have been a lot of conflicting thoughts about what is actually happening in some of those cases. And obviously, I know we've had people write in and say, stop talking about missing 411. It's been debunked. And some of them are bullshit. Absolutely. Like some of the cases, even the cases that Pelides has presented, I think, no, that is a child who is not properly looked after or things along those lines.
Yes, I agree.
Right. Yeah. But there are genuine mysterious cases. You know, again, I go back to my experience in Northern California, you know, in 2008, when my friend and I were parked in the Redwoods, roughly parallel to Mount Shasta. And I heard, I was trying to find my friend, and he'd been in a car accident recently, so he couldn't do anything strenuous. And we were in the trees, there was no one else around, or we're on the edge of the trees. And I called him, and I heard his voice way out in the goddamn trees. And I said, what the hell are you doing out there? And I said, get back here, man. So he comes back, and I said, why are you out there? And he said, well, I heard you calling me. And I thought, okay, well, I mean, we assumed it must have been my voice kind of bouncing around all the foliage and stuff in the forest. But it wasn't until months later I realized, no, I didn't start calling his name until after he'd gone into the trees. So something had called him in my voice from the forest. And if I hadn't looked for him when I did, he might not have come back out.
Yeah. I mean, as with anything, I think people go, oh, yeah, they're all explainable. But the thing about the 411 is, for every five cases that you can say, well, it was a fairly obvious explanation, and this has happened and that's happened, there'll be one that you just sit there and you just think, what on earth has happened here?
Yeah.
The other one that's always stuck with me was the three friends who were in a tent in that cold era, covered in snow, and one of them got up to go somewhere, or they were walking, and he just vanished. He just disappeared. There was no footprints, no ski tracks. He just disappeared. And there was nowhere that he couldn't be. He hadn't fallen down a hole. He hadn't run away. He hadn't skied off. He'd just gone. And one of the guys, when he was talking about it, he was heartbroken, absolutely heartbroken that his friend for 40 years had disappeared while he was with him.
Sure. I'd be heartbroken too. No, it's reached a point now where I'll see cases on the news about a missing person. And most of the time I think, well, that sucks. I mean, I always think it sucks. I've had people in my life who've had people go missing. I know what toll that takes on people. So I don't intend to trivialize it when we talk about it like this, but you know, this happens. But then there'll be times where I watch the news and I think they're going to find them in about 5 days. Or 2 weeks, and they're going to find them somewhere they've already been searched or somewhere they've already searched. And invariably it happens. And there, you know, there was a fairly high profile case. I'm not going to get into it because I don't want to be disrespectful to the family, but there was a fairly high profile case that hit the news a while back. And I remember telling you that they're going to find this person and they're going to find them in a place somewhere that's already been searched. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. We had one here in 2016. And the explanation for this has never made sense to me, because I've met lots of odd people in my life, right? I've never met anybody on a night out who thinks, I can't be asked to go home, I'm going to sleep in a bin, right? And there was this one chap called Corey McKeag, who was on a night out in Bury St. Edmunds in Suffolk, and he vanished, disappeared. And what they put forward as the explanation was that apparently he would get in waste paper bins to sleep off his drinking. And because they found no trace of him anywhere, they said, well, he must have done that again. And then the recycling lorries come, emptied the bin in, crushed him, and then dumped him on a site. And that is the official explanation as to what happened. There's no proof of that. There's no evidence of it. They just think that's the only explanation.
I feel like, I mean, okay, I know that happens. I know I've heard stories about homeless people dying that way. So like, I know it's a thing that occurs, but if that was the case, I mean, it seems to me to be a fairly simple matter of, okay, where are what's the catchment area for the bins where he likely would have been napping on his way home, and go check the landfill. There would be one place these things are going. Like, this would be a fairly simple thing to search out.
Yeah. Well, this is all a bit of a mistake after mistake, because they came up with this concept after they realized that they didn't have the proof, wasn't there. It was, they came to this conclusion after they could prove that this had happened. Because they don't know it happened. They just think it's the only way. And the evidence that the weight of the lorry was wrong. Just lots of things. So they said, oh, well, the weight of the lorry must have been wrong. And that's where he was really in the bin. You know, the amount of people in Manchester who end up in the canal.
Oh, yeah. I refuse to believe that's people falling in on of a night. Like, I know people do dumb shit when they're drunk, but there's no way that many people are just randomly falling into the goddamn canals. Not without help.
Yeah, because a prime example of this is that they say this about Manchester because, oh, well, you've got all these canals running through the city centre. I mean, we've got canals in Sheffield, right? As far as I remember, in the last 10 years, there's only been 2 incidents of people being found in the canal, one in Chesterfield, one in Sheffield. But one of them has several bars next to it. People aren't collapsing into the canal every night after a heavy, you know, and there's big drinkers going in those sure. pubs. You know, there was a girl in Sheffield who went on a night out, vanished. She was found face down in a stream, dead. Nothing. She tripped up and drowned.
Face down in a stream.
That you have to go out of your way to get into it. It's blocked off.
No, I'm not buying it. And to be clear, folks, I don't think these are what we're talking about now. I don't think this is paranormal. I think there are people doing this.
But Birmingham, as I was saying about Manchester, Birmingham's got more canals than Manchester. And there's nowhere near the level of fatality in Birmingham and than there is in Manchester.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think there's any accident at work there. I think that's something nefarious.
There's a lot more to it than meets the eye.
100%. I'll be honest. I actually get a little nervous on this topic. I always have because I think, because like Gannon Gilbertson, the detectives who brought up the whole smiley face thing, right? And obviously the smiley face thing is one very small part of this, but you know, they believe it's domestic terrorists, essentially. Like they're united by a common ideology that they don't fully understand. But what that means, and I think there's a strong working class element to this ideology. I think there is a certain amount of, I think there's an element of class involved. I don't think that's all of it, but I think that's part of it. I think there is like a working class sort of aspect to this, but it means it could be anyone. You know, you don't know who's involved in it. And something about that really gives me pause.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, especially in Manchester, because obviously quite a number of the victims are gay men. But, you know, Manchester's a very eclectic city and isn't known for targeted homophobic attacks by any nature. I'm sure they go on, sadly, but, you know, not to that level. You know, it is proud to advertise itself as one of the gayest major cities in the UK and a very gay safe venue. Obviously Canal Street and the venues around it are renowned in Europe as a venue for people to go out, not just for the gay community, but for everybody of a balanced mindset. You can have a great night round there. And so I find it very difficult because it still takes away the fact that even if you've got that kind of environment, you've still got to get that person in the water.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the autopsy results in case studies and drowning forensics suggest the use of GHB.
Yeah. Well, they don't do toxicology here.
They don't.
Not unless they believe it's justified. So they'll always say, oh, well, they were drunk.
Interesting. I mean, that's often the case in the American cases. I don't know about the Canadian ones, but I know quite often it's written off. And of course, the FBI's behavioral analysis unit has said they don't believe there's any larger organization at work. They think it's just a series of accidents. But again, they examined a handful of cases, and I want to say Wisconsin. So, you know, I don't think they've properly examined the breadth of evidence, but then, you know, I'm not in the FBI, so, you know, I'm could be talking on my ass, but something about it doesn't seem right. Even now, I've been interested in this for years, and my mind has not changed.
Yeah. No, very much so.
I've mentioned this before, but for a great read on the subject, that is a fictionalized take on a very real thing. Folks, check out Red X by David Demchuk. It's a horror novel, but it deals with the very real crimes committed against gay men in Toronto, in Toronto's village in the 80s. Again, very, very interesting read. Again, that's Red X by David Demchuk. All right, well, on that very heavy note, we are going to take a... I know, right? Jesus Christ.
We've got to think of bunnies and puppies.
Exactly. Well, I got something even better. We're going to take a quick break.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And we're going to hang out with the lovely and talented Brett Manning. We'll be right back with that. Welcome back. As we said at the top of the show, we do have a guest on this episode. It's someone I've been looking forward to having a conversation with for quite some time, ever since we met through the magic of Instagram, I'm pretty sure is kind of how it happened. But she is an accomplished artist, author, entrepreneur, owner, and operator of the Fabulous Lantern in Logansport, Indiana. And she also happens to be the creator of roughly half of my summer wardrobe. She is Brett Manning. Brett, welcome to the Ghost Story, guys.
Hello.
It is great to have you here, especially considering you're a successful artist anyways, but you're really having a moment. You were on PBS.
Yeah, I just did a video interview for a show called Eye on the Arts. And I thought when I first got an email about it that it was spam. And so I did a ton of research and I made sure to check the email. It was really coming from PBS. I did not believe it even after I looked at their website. I thought it was a very elaborate hoax. So, but it turned out to be real. And it was a fun interview. It was pretty cool.
So. Very cool. This is the curse of the self-deprecating creative, is when opportunity knocks, you think, no, I don't believe you.
I have been wronged so many times. So I just don't trust any email that comes through for the most part.
That's fair. Yeah. We usually get about one a day from some Bobo quote podcast promoter or so-and-so who will promise to, get me 5 trillion downloads, which I'm sure will be totally legitimate.
Wow. It happens in the podcast world too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 Any industry where, bullshit and malarkey are a big part of the currency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They always fall down though, because they've usually got about 20 followers.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're telling me that you are an influencer and you cannot top our Instagram account, which is just me shitposting, you have done something wrong.
So how was it joining PBS then, Brett? Because I was absolutely chuffed to bits for you when you were sharing all that.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a massive vindication of you and your work, really. And even though we've been joking about how self-deprecating you are, you are a phenomenally talented woman.
Thank you. It's just honestly kind of an honor to be contacted by PBS, because if I was going to be on any show, it would be something on PBS. Yeah, I don't know. They're really good about supporting smaller people, community efforts and stuff. So it's kind of cool that they found me. I don't know. I don't really know how to think about it. I haven't seen the interview yet. So let's just wait and see. Maybe it's absolutely horrible, but I don't know. Just to be a part of it, just to be asked, was an honor, really.
Oh yeah. I mean, PBS has got such a rich history. I mean, going back to when I was a kid, and we would get it in Revelstoke. And of course I always remember, PBS, because of viewers like you, is, when they would have the telethons and things like that. And I think I used to watch, I want to say Mr. Dress-Up or Mr. Rogers on PBS.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. I've never heard of Mr. Dress-Up.
I think Mr. Dress-Up might be the Canadian version of Mr. Rogers.
Okay. Interesting.
So, Brett, I'm really curious. I mean, you've been creating now for, I guess, full-time for how many years now?
Full-time since about 2016, I think. And I don't know math, so however many years that is.
Okay.
I don't know, 7 years, 8 years, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it'd be 7, 8 years.
But I've been making my art and, I guess, actively promoting and selling it since about 2009.
I think that's something people miss, when they're talking about independent artists. They'll see someone on television being interviewed or with, with the following you have on Instagram. And they sort of think, well, must be nice, but they don't see the literal years of work that goes into it.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious to me, because sometimes random strangers will message me and ask strange things like, how do I get that many followers? How do I do what you're doing? And I'm always very disappointing when I say, well, it's just years of persistence and work and enjoying what you do. And I don't think that's what they want me to tell them.
No. Everyone wants a hack.
Yeah.
You don't have a magic spell to share with them, Brett. What's wrong with you?
Unfortunately, I'm not very versed in spells, to be honest. Despite what my Instagram page looks like, very spooky and terrifying and magical, I'm actually kind of dumb.
I don't believe that for a second.
I don't know, man.
I really want to talk more about the art and particularly about your relationship with the subject of your art, you know, very often the fae. But before we move into that, I was kind of curious just to know more about how, you know, because social media is such a big part of our lives now, whether we want it to be or not, I'm kind of curious how that has affected your art. I mean, again, you've got something like 150,000 followers on Instagram?
No, not that many. a little less, like 126, I think. There's good things and there's bad things. I'm grateful that I have this audience that I've accumulated over these years. That's awesome. There was a time, like early on when I had Instagram, that I would try really hard to make something every day, which is insane. Like, that's not realistic. But I would just do like a little sketch every day. And sure, that would help out the algorithm, I guess. And people were more likely to see what I was making. It was more likely to show up on their feed. And that's probably how I gained followers. But it was also just like really unauthentic because it was things that I was just making kind of to be making it and putting it on the internet. At the same time, it wasn't bad either, though, because I was still honing in on the skill of like what I work with mostly. So just getting practice with ink. So I'm not like knocking what I did either. But it was just a lot of work, a lot of things that I wouldn't necessarily ever call my best work at all.
So is that your biggest platform, Instagram?
Yeah, it's the one that I enjoy the most because it's primarily just a visual space and I am a very visual person. Facebook I do have, but it's like linked to my Instagram. So when I post something from Instagram, it just automatically goes to Facebook. I really don't like spending time on Facebook.
Fair enough. And so have you found, as you've kind of accumulated followers and grown in popularity there, has that had a knock-on effect in how you engage with your art? Like, do you create differently or are you ever tempted to create differently in order to sort of appeal to that audience?
No, I don't care about appealing to them.
Nice.
I've thought about this before and I'm just like, I kind of don't care what other people think at all. So like, I make some stupid stuff, but sometimes that's my favorite stuff. That's a huge part of why I think people do like my work, because I just draw like exactly what I want to draw. Like I was saying, when I was doing those little drawings in the past, like I wasn't necessarily drawing exactly what I want to draw. So there was a bit of a disconnect, but really since I moved here where I live now in Indiana, and that was in about, I think that was 2016. That's really when I started realizing like I just only want to do things that like make me feel good, that are fulfilling to me, and I can't do anything else because it just crushes my soul and I'm a very sensitive person. So I just focus on what actually makes me feel good.
And it comes across. I mean, I think, again, I'm pretty sure it was through Instagram I first became aware of your work. And that authenticity comes across, you know, that is engaging. I'm very sympathetic because, you know, this show, I make the thing I make. I mm-hmm. make what I like to make. You know, I could do a lot better if I tried to do some, you know, something that was maybe more algorithmically oriented, but not me. Because I think people are, I mean, I think good people are pretty good at sniffing that out. I mean, I think there are some people who are going to be swayed by it no matter what, but I think that's just the wisdom of the crowd kind of thing. But I think, you know, the really good people, the really cool people are going to realize you're not being who you are.
Yeah, I think so too.
Nobody's worked out I'm behind the aliens in Miami yet.
That's something that I have not really gotten too much into. Like, that's one of those things that it seems like I would spend some time like doing some research, but I just haven't even cared. I'm just like, bleh, I don't even care at this point.
Yeah.
I've spent 3 hours on it, Brett. You don't need to waste any more time.
Okay, that's all I need to know. That's what I figured.
I feel like we could have a flow chart, Paul, that says, is it on TikTok? Is it real? Yes, no. Is it on TikTok? I'm not sure. Is it on TikTok? No. Oh, there we go. Hey, problem solved. I fixed it.
Yeah.
Just saved us 3 hours. Are you on TikTok, Brent?
No. But yeah, I know.
Fair
I know,
enough.
But no. No. I have an account just because I'm like psychotic in that I like to have my name. Like, it's there. My
sure.
Brett Manning art is taken. Because I've had people like clone my Instagram page, and I just, you know, I want to make my own official one just to have it out there.
We've also kind of struggled with that. Like we did the same thing. We have a Ghost Three Guys account, but uptake is not amazing. And also, you know, it helps if you put something on there, which I don't. So
I don't either. I have I have like no desire to post like video type content like that, talking about random things in my day. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too old. I don't know. But I'll see things on there and it gives me anxiety above anything else. I just can't stand it. It hurts.
No, I get you because I think the drive to produce video content is one of the worst things social media has done in recent years, because that shit is hard to produce. It's time consuming. It requires production value that is, you know, it's just extra money. And one of the nice things about podcasting is it democratized this, right? All you need is a microphone and a reasonable space to record in. Now you need ring lights and cameras and a video editor, you know, because audio editing is obviously very different from video editing. The whole thing drives me nuts. And then, quite frankly, you know, you have problems with ugly motherfuckers like me, where we are not, this is not an algorithmically friendly face. Like, let's just face it. I'm okay with that. And I think no one's going to be scrolling through TikTok and go, boy, let's see more of this. You know,
that's when you put on like really crazy makeup and like ghoulish makeup, because that's what I do when I do post a TikTok video, if I post any. So that's more engaging.
But see, but for me, I don't have that theater kid energy. So I'm just going to look like like the guy from The Cure waiting for a bus. You know,
I don't hate that though. I would be like really curious about the content of that person.
Why is Robert Smith catching the bus? That's what
exactly.
I'd want to know. He's very rich. Sure, he could be in a cap.
You know, I gotta say, of all the singers, he looks the least rich, and I don't know how he manages it, but he always looks poor.
Don't underestimate how popular The Cure really are.
Oh no, I wouldn't. I just. Somehow he always...
They are massive everywhere apart from here.
Well, on Krypton, Superman's just a guy.
Yeah, they're still quite popular in the UK, but they're one of those bands. They're massive in South America.
Really?
For a start.
Interesting.
That's like Morrissey.
I was just thinking Morrissey. Yeah, he's not great, but for some reason... Isn't he like really popular in Mexico or something?
He is, but he's also really racist, so it's kind of...
Oh, yeah.
A baffling dichotomy. Like,
it's bizarre. Yeah.
It's kind of like, this is a departure, but Rambo. The Rambo movies, very popular in Mexico. Sylvester Stallone, pretty racist, you know. And he was making the last Rambo movie, you know, Rambo, this is sad, whatever it's called. And he says, you know, I think we're going to make it because I don't think Rambo likes Mexicans. Really? I know, I think you don't like Mexicans. Mexicans love Rambo. You might want to rethink this. And he didn't. And the movie is a curse upon your eyes.
Good thing I'll never watch it.
Yeah, no, you made the right choice. I went to the cinema to see it. I wasted not only an hour and 20 minutes of my life, but 15 of my dollars.
Oof, sorry about that.
I had it on my planner for 2 months and I've just deleted it because I couldn't bring myself to watch it even drunk.
Oh, really? You actually were trying to watch the new Rambo?
No, I didn't even get that far. I just kept looking at it going... Do I really want to do this?
Just a waste.
And in the end, I didn't.
Yeah.
No.
I thought I could watch another really crap Bigfoot instead.
I'm always looking for more of those. That's for sure.
Paul, I could wrap myself in shag carpet and just film me walking around my apartment, and it would have better entertainment value than Rambo 5.
Yes. That's just another good thing that you could put on a TikTok. These different characters. Like, what is he doing?
I guess, since we're talking about movies, you're getting into short film content, which is pretty cool.
Sort of. Sort of. It's fun. It's mostly just because it's fun for me to do.
Right.
And I'm really, like, I really like the aesthetic of old 1920s movies.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, like, and the way I'm doing it is the absolute easiest, cheapest way possible. It is part of them that they are not made with anything other than an iPhone.
Right.
So that's kind of, like, the weird charm, I guess. But just like using the editing apps that are already available on my phone. Like, there's not much more to it than that. There's like no grand effects at all. It's just like costuming and lighting and interesting backgrounds and very vague, kind of fairy-centric storytelling. And if people are familiar with fairy lore, then they will most likely understand the video because they're kind of surreal at the same time. But if you're versed in fairy lore, I think people would understand what's happening in these little, they're like between 2 and 5 minute long shorts.
Yeah. I really enjoy them. And I think one of the cool things about the film work you've done so far is I think you've got a really great understanding of what people's attention span with short films, because some people, they make shorts and they're 30, 40 minutes. And I just think, don't do that.
Yeah. I've thought about that. So I have there's kind of a project involved, like very loosely, and I don't even have like a time frame for it, but I want to have I have three right now. I might make three more, and I would potentially put them all together in a short of little vignettes. So the longest, like a 25 minute long little movie.
Okay.
And that's kind of the goal right now, I guess. But we'll see. It's hard because I'm trying to get some friends and stuff to help out, and just like wrangling people together all at the same time is very difficult. So that's part of it. It's also really cold outside right now, and I want them all to be outside in the woods. So
right,
it's on pause at the moment.
No, that's fair enough. I love the sound of it though. It's very like very Inland Empire.
Yeah, I've referred to that to a couple of the people who have helped me. Just like, because it's all on an iPhone. It's only iPhone only. And
right.
That's weird for some people, but, and most of them haven't seen Inland Empire, so it's just me rambling to them. But yeah, I've definitely referenced that.
I mean, that's got to be probably David Lynch's least seen movie, Inland Empire.
I haven't even seen the whole thing.
Okay.
Feel bad. I've watched maybe the first half of it, and I think I just fell asleep, which is odd because I love David Lynch, but I still haven't seen the whole of it.
it's really, I mean, I guess because it was a bunch of disparate ideas kind of melded together into one thing, it's pretty fractured. It's hard to, mm-hmm. And at 3 hours long, it's a lot.
Oh, wow. Maybe I haven't seen half of it. I feel like I've only watched maybe. only seen maybe like.
It just felt like you'd seen half of it.
I didn't realize it was 3 hours.
Pretty sure, yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but I'm fairly certain it's in the 3 hour range.
I love David Lynch.
Paramount Plus just got the third season of Twin Peaks, and I'm really considering watching it again.
Cool, yeah. I need to watch that one again. I've seen season one and two, I don't know how many times. I've only watched the third season just the one time when I think I borrowed DVDs or something, but that was years ago at this point, so I'm due to watch it again.
Paul, have you seen the third season of Twin Peaks?
Yes, I enjoyed it immensely. It wasn't anywhere near as disappointing as I feared.
Yeah, well, let's divert into that for a second, just because I really loved that season. And because it subverted expectations so well. You know, we all kind of were expecting basically Twin Peaks season three. We thought it's going to be Cooper and it's going to be fun and it's going to be all those things, but it wasn't. It was really somber. And, you know, I think one of the things I liked about it most was it had this sense, when they had the scenes back in Twin Peaks, it very much had this sense of, like, the morning after a party. Everything was very matter-of-fact. They didn't have that dreamy atmosphere, except in very, very specific places. Everything was very, like, this is kind of, we've grown up, and we've moved on, and life doesn't have the same rhythm and music it once did.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really ballsy move.
That's a really cool way to look at that season.
The soundscapes, the way he, because he sound designs everything himself. And something that really twigged my notice when I was watching it is like the sound of the wind in the trees, which was not part of it before, right? Everything was, you know, it was all stylized. You're in this TV show, you're in a soap opera, but in this, you know, you woke up, the dream's over, and it's the woods and you are in the world. You can't escape it. Yeah. I just adored that.
I think that just shows just how good Lynch has always been in his career, because despite having a cult following and occasionally crossing over and having a massive hit, he's never, ever been one of those directors that when you turn up to see one of his films, you've no idea what's going to happen, because he's so wildly inconsistent in a film direction sense rather than a quality sense, that I think he has been probably the most consistently inconsistent director of the last 35 years.
Yeah. And I really think you can tell, you know, because he has this history with transcendental meditation and he's a very spiritual guy. And I really feel like there's a lot of bleed over from, say, Twin Peaks to what we all do.
I thought that so much, especially watching the third season of Twin Peaks. You can see it in the first two seasons, but the thing that I picked up on mostly was just the interconnectedness of like other dimensions and stuff bleeding into each other, and just how prevalent talk about that is in like podcasts like this that I listen to. And I was like, oh, he's obviously into the same weird stuff that I listen to and think about all the time. That's awesome. It didn't ever strike me as much as it did after I watched the third one, but yeah.
The references in the third one seemed much more explicit.
Yeah.
There was one that caught my eye, and it's a visual metaphor I've used quite a bit sort of in my own describing of the paranormal, where they enter the gas station, which is the way station between the two worlds, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And they're walking through a hallway, and he overlays that on top of moving through the forest is a way to show that these two things can occupy the same space.
Yeah.
To show the transit is, you know, it's not just one place, it's many places. And I think that's pretty bang on as far as these things go. I mean, obviously we like to say no one really understands the paranormal. I don't think we can, but I think that's a really good visual metaphor for describing it. Because I don't think it's ever just one thing.
Multiple times and places just overlapping constantly. Yeah, it's a really good visual interpretation of that concept. Also, you mentioned he's into transcendental meditation. Have you ever read his book called Catching the Big Fish? It's like a really short little book, and I think it's even got some little illustrations in it. It's really a fun, quick read, and I recommend it.
So coincidentally, I was in Los Angeles about 6-7 years ago, and I was in a part of town. I don't even remember where I was. It's not somewhere I normally go, but there was a bookstore, and I wandered in off the street just for no apparent reason. And right in front of me was an autographed copy of that. So I actually bought it. Yeah. I bought it for a friend of mine.
That's awesome. So cool.
I wish I'd taken the time to read the fucking thing. Because my friend's a huge Twin Peaks nerd. So I got it for him, but, I'll have to grab a copy of that.
Yeah. It's a super short book, but you should read it. It's good. Yeah.
Are you a meditation practitioner?
Not traditionally. I generally say like when I'm drawing, that's my more meditative time, really, because it seems like, you know, you lose track of time. It is almost like a missing time thing. Hours and hours can go by and then it's like, oh my, it's already dark out, but I've just been focused on putting this on paper, like getting it out of my head and putting it on paper. So to me, that's kind of the closest thing to meditation that I do or I'm capable of doing. I don't know. I've tried to do like traditional stuff off and on, but I am not good at it. My brain cannot be cleared. The only time my brain is mostly at peace is when I'm sitting and drawing. So...
I think everyone has to take their own path to, you know, cause I think Lynch has talked about like the top of the mountain, you know, and I think everyone has to take their own path there. And I think drawing is just as valid a path as
for sure
sitting and chanting or humming or whatever.
It's different things are going to work for different people. And that's just how everything is. And I'm always really cautious of people who say like, nope, that's not real meditation. Cause I'm like, well, It is for me.
I'm always cautious of people who say no, that's the wrong way to anything. Usually they're assholes.
There's no wrong way. You can literally come up with any kind of way to solve a problem. Like, that's just life.
Since you mentioned drawing, and you know, we've talked about you know, sort of the otherworldly nature of these things, your work is very focused. I shouldn't say focused, but it involves heavily elements of the fae, of fae culture, the, you know, sort of the lore of the good folk. Does it feel, because it sometimes seems like you're almost channeling more than you are inventing. I mean, I'm sure I know there is invention involved, but sometimes it seems like when I look at your work, especially your book, One Foot in the Green, which is amazing.
Thanks.
It really feels representative, like you're a conduit for something. Have you ever felt that way?
So, yes. Whenever I say this to people, I feel like I sound insane. But yes, kind of that's ultimately like how that book came into be. And it's actually extremely weird and interesting to me how many people, after they get the book, will contact me and say something along the lines of that they have seen one of these things, like either in their mind's eye during a meditation or like in the physical world. And they're like, what was it? Can you tell me more? There wasn't enough about this specific thing in the book. I need to know. And I'm just like, I'm more surprised that you're telling me this, because I don't know. They're just like, not to sound crazy, but they are kind of like channeled in a weird way where it seems like something wants to be known. Something wants to be made physical. And there are other times where I'll think of something and it feels wrong to capture it or put it on paper. So like, I won't draw those. It's like a very respectful like relationship that I have with what I create, if that makes any sense. So the things that ended up in the book are things that wanted to be in the book.
I was listening earlier to your interview when you were on Mysteries and Monsters.
Great show.
It was a great show. Yeah. I've heard the host. I heard the host is real dick, but you know, real prima donna, I hear. He's not, folks. I'm kidding. Jesus Christ.
We had a lovely time.
It's a great show. But there's a part in there that really jumped out at me. That, and check, if folks, if you haven't heard that episode, I'll put a link in the show notes. There's a part in there where you talk about how a lot of folks have this very, very fear-based view of that side of the world. And I know certainly, you know, obviously I've joked about it for years on this show, ever since we did episode 27, where I was very incautious with my speech and I paid a price for it. And there have been a handful of times since then where I have been similarly incautious and I've had, you know, I've had my ass handed to me in various ways. And so I've kind of turned it into a joke, obviously, a little bit like my fear of this, but I've really come a long way into to just a place of respect and understanding. I still joke about the fear because it's a good bit, but it really was sort of your work and the work of someone else we're hoping to have on the show at some point in the near future, Jo Hickey Hall.
Oh, she's awesome.
She's great.
Yeah.
Of the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast.
That's one of my favorite shows.
Like I said, I just feel like it's allowed for this sort of greater understanding and respect. And I'm kind of curious, do you feel like there is more of that understanding and respect out there now? Or do you think it's the needle hasn't moved?
I think people are more aware of traditional fairy lore. Whether or not they have any kind of respect for it, I really don't know. I think it has more to do with whether or not you're actually called to be a part of that world. Because I personally never sought out fairies ever. I've always been way more into like Sasquatch and Loch Ness Monster. And then something just like took hold of me one day and I just started like becoming obsessed with drawing these different entities. And yeah, it's definitely more of just a curiosity and a respect thing and just a total admiration. I see them as just like manifestations of nature, and that's something that's super important to all of us to be stewards of and take care of. And I think also that has a lot to do with why talk about fairies and different things like that is maybe more prevalent now than it has been for a while because of the state of the world.
I was wondering that though. And Paul, I'm kind of curious to get your take on this too, this notion, because I think there is something to that. I think that we are in this precarious situation as far as the environment goes. And really, I mean, this is not news. You know, anyone who says, oh, they're talking about climate change now, know that this has been an escalating problem for years. I remember reading Mother Jones 25 years ago,
yeah,
and they were talking about these things, you know? But it's reaching a point of crisis. It's reaching a head. And I'm kind of curious whether, yeah, what your thoughts are as far as, you know, do we think that the natural world is trying to sort of correct us or to reach out and show us that there is a need or we're at a crisis point? What do you think?
Maybe it's more like a reaching out to show that it's sentient, that it's alive. It needs to be taken care of in some kind of way. Sure, I feel like, you know, at some point without people, nature could take care of itself, but that's not the case right now. So it's almost like reaching out to the ones that they know could make some kind of change.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I think there's a lot gone on over the last 30 years, especially in regards to the fact that people who have these encounters with whatever they are feel comfortable enough in the modern era to be able to talk about them without fear of ridicule or being classed as changelings or some other kind of spurious accusations that used to fly about and not that long ago either. But I also think that it does seem very tethered in the ecological movement, that it seems to, as Brett says there, I have a feeling that a lot of this is people, are they being chosen or are they choosing to show themselves to certain people because they understand that whilst they may consider themselves to be different species or different entities, that they find a connection on a spiritual level. And therefore, for them, whilst we may look different, we feel the same inside. And perhaps it's connecting to that, that people are becoming more aware of things. You can see that animism is becoming more popular. People are beginning to have a bit more connection. I think over most of the Industrial Revolution, certainly through large parts of the 20th century, people were moving away from nature into the urban setting. And I think people have got sick of that experiment. And a lot of people are wanting to turn the clock back, not necessarily in regards to losing technology, but certainly I think in this kind of 90-mile-an-hour lifestyle that a lot of people have had, that I think as technology advances, we understand that we don't have to be smack back in the middle of some kind of concrete hellhole. We can commute electronically these days and converse with people from all around the world and be able to walk out of our door and get some fresh air and spend some time in some beautiful landscapes and be closer to nature. And I think that's what, as humans, we need to revert to.
It's not like reverting in any kind of negative way either. Like, you can still be intelligent and work with all of the technologies and stuff that we currently have. And also just rekindle a relationship that we have always had with nature. Really, that's kind of the epitome of like what I think, why I work with like different fairy type things, why I illustrate what I do. Just getting back into the natural world. We are nature. We're part of it. And so many people want to like be separated from that.
I think you're right. I think that's a major, and it has been a major problem for a long time. I think as we have become more technologically advanced, I think we've managed to insulate ourselves from a lot of nature because we, you know, nature is by its very definition, it is wild. It is unpredictable. It operates according to it, you know, according to its own systems and rules. And I think we have always had, or we've had this notion, especially since the Industrial Revolution, that we can control everything.
Yeah,
and that
fairies, like, that's another thing I love about them. There's nothing, they're their own entities. You cannot control them, but you can ride along with, like, the flow of what is happening. You can learn to be a part of the flux and the change and the motion and embrace that. And it's, I feel like you'll feel healthier when you do something like that.
And we just had a conversation about this, Paul, on the last episode, on the Great British Haunt Off, episode 181. We were talking about these dildos who have a problem with Taylor Swift. And, you know, and not because she flies a private plane and you know, has an enormous ecological footprint, but because, you know, she's a woman and she's successful and they hate that.
No. There's no coincidence there, is there?
No. But, you know, we were saying that, like, change is the nature of the world. And it's the nature of every system evolves. That's just unavoidable. That's how the world works.
Yeah.
Every system kind of moves towards the sea. And I feel like the people I know who refuse to change, who refuse to evolve, they just end up miserable.
Absolutely. They're just being stagnant. That's not healthy. You're not moving. You're just, I don't even know. You're just calcifying, really.
100%. Because you think about it, you stand in a river and you feel that current against you and it's always moving. And if you're standing there for a really long time, it gets tiring, you know? And eventually, like, the river goes up, the river goes down. If you're just sitting there and the river is parting around you, I mean, there are some people who I think are, you know, they're kind of the rocks. They're meant to be fixed points, but most of us are meant to go with that flow. And I think if you don't, it just exhausts you and makes you a shitty, miserable person. And I feel like, kind of as a larger society, I feel like we've really tried to be that rock, you know, and just try to make everything move around us. And I think we're sort of reaching that point of where we kind of have to recognize that, no, this is not tenable. This is not a long-term solution.
I hope so.
You and me both.
Even in the modern era, we have thousands of years of history behind us, and we still ignore the very clear guidance that all empires fall, and none of them believed that they had a finite time on this earth. They thought they were going to last forever until they didn't. And it doesn't matter what continent you're on, what period you're on, they've all crumbled eventually.
It's true.
But the ghost story, guys, we will stick around. Forever.
But we adapt, we flow, we are.
Exactly. We will inhabit lattices of light, taking our message of ghost story guidance-ness out into the universe, a la 2001.
We are the wave.
That's it. All right. That got weird. Sorry, Brett.
Okay.
She just hangs up. I get it. That's fair. These fucking guys. I was on PBS. I don't need this shit.
No. Like I said, just because I was on PBS doesn't mean I'm not dumb. Kind of a doofus. I don't know if you know that.
You've been on Mysteries and Monsters, Brett, so you're not dumb.
I felt really intimidated because the people I hear on your show actually know things. And the only thing I can confidently really talk about is like the art making process. Like, what pens and paper do I use? But when I'm talking about any of this other stuff, it's like, well, first of all, nobody really knows anyway, so what does it even matter? But I do overthink it because I hear other people who have just like spent their lives talking about all of this stuff all the time, and I am not at that level. And I probably never will be.
But I've heard lots of people talk about things with the utmost confidence, which is absolute bonkers.
Yeah.
You know, and none of it's true. And I've had some very strange conversations this week dealing with some very dangerous and strange people in the Fortean worlds over the last few years. So and just people not knowing who they were or forgetting about them. Those kinds of names that you've come across in the last 15 years that have had the like 5 minutes of fame and you don't want to hear about them again. And then somebody mentions it and you're like, oh, you're taking me back to that stupid video and conspiracies. Yeah. And without naming the registered sex offender, we'll leave it there.
Oh, you can't leave me hanging. Like, well, tell me off air. Fine.
I'm just getting over having to research serial killers for an interview, which was obviously a new diversion for me.
Is that the Zodiac one?
Yeah, it was good.
Cool.
I was just talking about serial killers yesterday, not to take it to that topic, but my mom almost dated a serial killer. Famous one. His Have you ever heard of Michael Swango?
Yes.
My mom was like approached by him and went out on a date, and then he asked her to come back the next day for a home cooked meal, and he was a poisoner.
Oh shit.
I'm trying to think, was Swango the doctor?
Yes. He worked at the hospital that my mom was a receptionist.
And he ended up running off to Africa.
Yes, South Africa. Yep.
He's one of them that when you look back at what he did, you think, how did this guy, he kept bouncing, he kept poisoning loads of people in hospitals and then just moving.
And the reason my mom didn't go on the second date was because so many nurses approached her and told her, he's kind of weird, don't do it. And so she listened. And people were aware that he was weird, but people didn't really know what he was up to.
I've never been so happy to have no social life. Brett, just before we let you go, because we could keep you on here talking about weird shit all day, but we won't do that to you. I just want to talk a little bit about the lanterns, so people can know a little bit about that. So, and of course, the Lantern is your shop in Logansport, Indiana. How did you decide to go the brick and mortar route?
That's just something that stumbled upon me. In early 2020, my friends had bought a very old building, and it was completely, it was a disaster inside, really. They had a ton of work to do, and they were planning on building out shop spaces within this older building. And they just asked me, like, right away if I would be interested in having one of those shop spaces. And it was 2020, and I didn't know what would happen ever with anything in the world. And I was staying home working, so I was actually able to save up a lot of money so I could, like, get my business license and get a license so I could purchase wholesale stuff for the store. And I had over a year, really, to, like, accumulate all the product and stuff for the shop and make my own things for it. So, yeah, it was just based on the fact that my friends bought this building and asked if I want to do it. I was like, might as well. Like, the rent that I'm paying is extremely affordable. Like, if I was going to have just a personal studio space and have nobody come in and shop, it would still be worth it. So now I can have people in and, like, make some money too. Because I never thought I would have one. I never even, like, thought of having a physical shop.
Have you found it's become more of a hub for the community who, prior to that, Brett, didn't have that kind of venue to even just hang out and talk about wonderfully weird things?
Absolutely. It's cool how many people come to the whole building, because the building itself has a bunch going on. There's an arcade, there's a record store, restaurant/bar, there's a barbershop, there's a comic book store. So there's a lot going on all the time. And I'm just grateful. It's awesome. And I've met so many cool people. And it's just inspiring and encouraging, because there are people who want these kind of things. They don't want to just have to go to Walmart or something. So it's really brought out this community of people who are creative and just, like, interested in getting things moving. And it's in the downtown area of Logansport, very, like, historic downtown. So it's just really interesting seeing that kind of come back to life, really.
It's been very cool watching it develop on Instagram, you know, through the Lantern's account and your account. I'm actually only about 5 hours away now.
I know. So aren't you in London?
I am.
Yeah, because I have a friend who lives there, and for the grand opening, she actually drove down and came to the grand opening.
Awesome.
So, and she was like, it wasn't that bad of a drive.
5 hours is not that bad. On Saturday, I drove 2 hours into Toronto just to go see a movie.
2 hours here, you'd be in the sea. Bobbing about off Bridlington.
What a shame. And miss out on Scunthorpe.
I've been to Scunthorpe more than I would like to admit.
I feel like once is more than anyone would like to admit.
Yeah, a lot more. I've done it more than once in a week once. Anyway,
yes,
it's a long story, and not for now. Though the first time I ever went is because we thought it was by the coast, and we went there for fish and chips. We didn't realise it was 50 miles from the sea and an industrial
Wow.
Nice fish and chips, though.
I was driving delivery last night, and I had to pick up at this fish and chip place. And it's literally in an industrial park. I thought I was going to get stabbed. It's just a door in the corner of this yard. It was insane. But I got to the door, and the food smelled amazing. And I thought, okay, I'm fine. So I, you know, took the person's food, put it in my bag. The whole car smelled like goddamn fish for the rest of the night. I was so mad. I got back in. I thought, what the hell is that? Oh, it's the fish. It's the fish.
So how are you looking forward to becoming the new Bob Ross then, when you get your own PBS show?
It's a lot of pressure. I was actually brought that up when they were filming me draw, because Bob Ross spends... What is it, like, he can finish a painting in 26 minutes, like a full painting. And nice. They filmed me draw with the tiniest pen for like 26 minutes. And I got like a square inch done. And I was like, yep, that's the next Bob Ross for you.
Perhaps you need to have a mouse in your pocket like he sometimes did.
I do have so many cats and bunnies. I would love to have. Oh, yeah. Love to have an animal companion. Bristle's going to be in the PBS. Well, they got a lot of footage of him. Whether or not he'll make the cut, I don't know. But I have a feeling Bristle the Pig will be on PBS.
I'm a big fan of Bristle. So he's amazing. That's good news.
He's a really good creature.
So, Brett, thank you so much for taking all this time to hang out with us, especially after having done another interview today. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, awesome. It's been really great.
Where can everyone find you online?
Mostly on Instagram. And it would be my name, Brett Manning, and then the word art. So Brett Manning Art on Instagram. And my Etsy shop, I guess, which is my name again, Brett Manning, or Brett is a Girl, all one word.
Perfect. Well, again, our guest has been the multi-talented Brett Manning. You'll find a link to all of Brett's stuff in the show notes. Again, you'll find her work on Instagram, all those places, and again through most of the summer. So keep an eye out. Brett, thanks again for being here.
Thank you, Brett.
Absolutely.
Welcome back. Thanks again to Brett Manning for hanging out with us. That was great. Again, that was my first time actually speaking to her. We've exchanged DMs for a number of years, but that was the first time actually talking to her. So that was very cool.
Yeah, great fun.
And again, you'll find a link to all of Brett's stuff in the show notes. She's on Instagram as Brett Manning Art. You'll find a link to her Etsy store in the show notes. And of course, if you are near to Logansport, Indiana, make sure to go check out the lantern. Paul, my friend, where can everyone find you online?
You can find Mysteries and Monsters across all social media networks and on most good podcast sites, and probably a few ropey ones.
I'm at Largely the Truth on Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, and Letterboxd. You can find my horror movie podcast, Weird Together, everywhere. Fine podcasts live. And if you want to pick up some Ghost Story Guys merch, head to our website at ghoststoryguys.com. You'll find t-shirts, stickers, all kinds of cool stuff. And not only do you get high-quality Ghost Story Guys gear, you will get a thank you video from both of us. We think we have figured out a workaround, so you'll get a little video note from each of us. So again, that's at ghoststoryguys.com for all your merchandise needs. Finally, we have a musical guest, as we love to do on these shows. We mentioned in the previous episode of Talk Spooky that we were running a series of tracks from artist Greco Ray, and this episode we'll be playing the second of those three tracks. This one is a collaboration between Greco Ray and DJ Jailbreak. The song is Listen. You'll find a link in the show notes to both DJ Jailbreak and Greco Ray's respective social media and Bandcamp accounts. And again, if you like what you hear, make sure to go and check out more. Thanks so much for listening, folks. If you want to get in touch, shoot us an email, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. You can send us a DM on Instagram. We get a lot of messages there, but we will still try our best to see it and get it in the show. And we will be back next week with episode 182. But until then, we will leave you with DJ Jailbreak and Greco Ray with their track, Listen.
I can see clearly now when we are together, nothing seems to matter, but you know how to make it count. Every second's worth it. This might be perfect. Hold me when the sun goes down. Listen to my heart. Tell me what it's all about.